Ramsey Lewis Trio with Wade in the Water. This is the title track of the album of the same name, released in 1966. And it's still good. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today, I'm wading into some uncharted waters here today. And hopefully you will wade with me. Well, let's start off with yet another example of the Trump version of hospitality. Of course, you know, Donald Trump is gone physically and mentally, too, to some degree. But there is a small problem, and the problem concerns Kamala Harris and her husband, Doug Emhoff, who apparently have to stay in temporary quarters because the house that is supposed to be ready for them just isn't. That's embarrassing. And it hasn't caused a big issue. It hasn't caused a ruckus. But I'm saying this is how people express contempt. And it should be made known to the public that this is how Trump operates. I don't care. I don't care if you sleep in the street. That's your problem. You'll have to fix it. I'm out of here. I have my bed in Mar-a-Lago in Florida. That's a little tacky, isn't it? Very tacky. But it's so Trump. It is so Trump to do something like that. And it gives me a kind of a good start here to discuss an aspect of what is going on that really isn't being discussed. And yet it is so important. I have to raise the question. I may be wrong in raising the question, but I'm raising it just the same. The question is the rise, it seems, of the political twofers. You get two for the price of one. It has already happened with the top position of President Joe Biden, and his wife, Jill Biden. And we see an aspect to governance that I didn't expect. I'm having a little trouble with it, and I wondered whether you could straighten me out here. Because to my mind, the people elected Joe Biden. Okay. They didn't elect Jill Biden. And I understand, and we have to give respect here. She is the spouse of Joe Biden, the president. And increasingly is showing that she has a rightful place to take as well in this thing called governance. She's half now of the presidency by virtue of her being married to Joe Biden. I have a little trouble with that. It's been increasing in recent years that the spouse of the elected official is becoming more and more obvious and more significant in the office of whatever it is that they're elected to. And it is to be presumed that they are entitled to some kind of participation in power sharing. I am not comfortable with that. And I think we have to have a discussion about that as a nation. When people went into the to cast their votes, it said only one name, Joe Biden. So it is assumed that the person running for that particular office is one person, not a duo. One person is running for that office, and people are voting whether to elect or not to elect that person. More and more, we're seeing a more pronounced presence. And I'm not so sure it is a legal presence, but more and more, we're seeing the affirmation of spouses, and I'll get to Kamala Harris in a minute, that the spouse is also assumed to be part of the package. Nope. In the case of, say, Kamala Harris, she positively grins, she beams with joy when her husband is referred to now as the second gentleman of the United States. Well, I understand her pride. He is, after all, her husband. She is, after all, his wife. And now, by virtue of elections, that office is Kamala Harris is the second lady of the country. She wasn't elected to be that, but she is that for all intents and purposes. Okay, I'm no problem so far. Jill Biden is the first lady, i.e., the wife or the spouse of the top candidate who was running for president. He won, so it is not out of bounds to consider her as important as a husband in that sense. She is married to the top guy, okay? So she is the first lady. Kamala Harris is elected as vice president of the United States. I get that. Her husband, however, is mentioned and being touted as the second gentleman of the United States. Joe Biden is the first gentleman of the United States, being president, and it is to be assumed that Kamala Harris, being elected vice president, her husband is now referred to as the second gentleman of the United States. Okay. I mean, whatever floats your boat. However, he too is grinning a lot with obvious pride. He is married to the second gentlewoman of the United States. So that makes him the second gentleman of the United States. But what exactly does that mean? Is this now an official designation? And if so, what is that designation? Is this a twofer? You get Kamala Harris as vice president, and you get her husband too. is this the understanding we ought to have? you get the husband as well. He's part of the package. However, I don't recall his name being on the ballot. Whether they call him second gentleman or really great guy or, you know, the man, I don't care what they call him. I know for a fact he was not on the ballot as a person to be elected in such a position, or that even such a position existed for election. What if I thought somebody else made a really good second gentleman, but we have to vote then, or we have to cast our lot with the second gentleman, the man who's married to the second lady? And it's being discussed more and more, you know, this incredible partnership that they have. They're a kind of a new age couple in politics. I think we need some definition here. Because it seems to me that we are being asked to accept a position, a person in a position of power, the second most powerful office in the nation, who didn't have to run for his office, and whose position is not clear, whose authority and power simply have not been discussed. Are we to assume that Doug Emhoff, who is the husband of Kamala Harris, a former lawyer who, since her election, has left his regular job at a law firm and is considered to be quite capable as a lawyer and all of that. All that is great, but he didn't run for office. And exactly how much access should he have as the second gentleman of the United States? Is it to be presumed that he is in partnership with Kamala Harris in her capacity as Second Lady of the United States? Does he get to participate in meetings? Does he get to make policy? Does he get to know things he's not supposed to know and do things he's not supposed to do, all because he's married to the vice president? And the same goes for Jill Biden. Does she, by virtue of the fact that she is married to the President of the United States, does that give her automatic political access? And does she enjoy a special designation that we are not supposed to question what she does? This is it's a simple question, but it is an appropriate question. Nobody elected Jill Biden. Nobody elected Doug Emhoff. And yet they have these titles. What exactly do these titles entitle them to? Or was this just made up and it has become fact now simply because there was no discussion about this? Do they get to have access to the nation's secrets Do they get to participate in international negotiations? Do they get to enjoy special privileges simply because they came as part of the package? Are there new rules now that say a person married to a person of high office is to be given the rights and privileges, the same rights and privileges, as a person of that office? As the Haitians say, problem. I see a problem. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So, you see, these things happen and they are simply insinuated, but they are in fact real. They become real. Nobody is going to think of saying, Jill Biden, what are you doing in this meeting? Have a seat in the hallway. When we're done, we'll call you. Or, Mr. Emhoff, what are you doing here in the thick of a major negotiation with members of the international community who were duly elected to be such? You're not. Why are you here? Aren't the people entitled to know who has what office, what that office is, what it does, what its powers are, and obviously what its limitations are? But we're just coasting along. And we're coasting along, it seems to me, on dangerous ground. We cannot have people who are spouses of powerful people assumed as having the same power as the spouses who were elected, who were running for these offices and campaigned for these offices and were elected. And there you are. Simply because you're married to such and such. That's a problem. And it will explode into a major problem, I predict. I'm not questioning their qualifications. I'm questioning this process and the assumption, it seems, that, you know, it's a twofer. You elect her, you get him. You elect him, you get her. She doesn't have to campaign. She doesn't have to come before the people. Or in the case of our vice president, Doug Emhoff never had to come before anybody and explain himself. And the party has never had to explain this new configuration. It just happened. And we are now going along. The nation has accepted it, apparently. There's no fuss being made about it. But I have problems with it. And we all should have immediate clarification of this question, because it gets to the heart of democratic protocols. Are we now to understand that a person running for office is to be assumed, if the person is married, to be half of a team that we knew nothing about, because the other half of that person's life now becomes a major force in what the nation is doing and thinking? Is that person automatically considered qualified to be half of the team? Are we okay with that? The average person, let's say, operating at a very high level, having access to secrets and all kinds of information that should not be available to ordinary people. Well, they got it now. How did you get it? Did you go to diplomatic school? Did you have a degree in international relations? Have you been in office for a while? No, you observed. You're just there. And what? And it is to be presumed that as the people vote for whoever it is you're connected to, they're voting for you as well. And you qualify automatically for the goodies of the office simply because you're married to person A or person B who ran for election. We have to have this question. We have to have this question answered, and soon. We have to, because this idea, we have already accepted it as being not important. This is not an important issue. Well, we learn as a nation how important it is when one day some nation decides that nothing that they have agreed to in the presence of this person is actually legal. And so treaties should be scrapped. Promises made should be scrapped. And the United States is in breach of national and international law. The people did not elect a twofer. They did not know that this was the deal. We get a second person because, well, they're so generous to give us another one on top of the one that we elect or don't even elect. But there is that other person smack in the middle of things that don't concern them. They haven't been vetted. And we don't know who they are. We don't know who they're connected to. We do not know if Mr. Emhoff, the husband of Kamala Harris, who worked at a law firm, has now acquired a new gig in which he is serving unofficially, let's say, as a consultant because he's so close to the Vice President of the United States. There are people who may have interests in getting legislation passed or in getting access to certain things, and they work through him, which makes him technically a consultant. He's running his own business. He would be, in any event, in that situation. He may be compromising the integrity of national intelligence simply by doing that. So when did it happen that he got cleared? Or that Jill Biden got cleared to do these things? Well, I will take a break, and you could ponder during the break, and when we come back, we'll tackle this question head on, right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about political twofers that we got, or that the people got, when they went and voted for one person. Because that person presented him or herself as a candidate for the specific office and got elected. We had no idea, going to vote for that one person, that we were getting a twofer. But it seems that's the new thing. It seems that's the way it's going to be. And if it is going to be that way, then the people have a right to expect a thorough and proper vetting. Simply because you're married to person A or person B who has run for office and has been elected, does that mean you get some of the bennies as well? You get automatic clearance. And you get to enjoy the office as well, without any special inspection. We just have to accept that you're okay. You're married to Kamala Harris, so you're all right. I don't think so. I don't remember that your name appeared on the ballot and that you are running as a co-candidate with anybody. So how is it turning out that you pretty much are part of the office that the candidate has won? I don't know that we should accept that. I'm thinking we need to have a special talk about it. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Eutrice?
Okay. How's by you?
Well, you know me, my thumbs were here. Everything's all right.
Hanging in by your thumbs. Just
hanging on, yeah. I got to disagree with you kind of on this point, because historically in this country, the institution of marriage as pertaining to political office, especially the presidency, has always been kind of sacrosanct. I mean, you can go back to the times of Nancy Reagan and Ron, even when he was undergoing his afflictions with Alzheimer's, how she stepped into the breach. I think it's always been the American idea that when you're married, the union provides commonality. And I don't believe that the spouse should have any direct interaction in the mechanics of government. But you share the union of marriage. You're one. I mean, there has never been a single president.
But don't you know couples who are married? You like the husband, hate the wife.
Yeah.
Okay, so by your reasoning, the country is going to be forced to like the husband and like the wife, because the man is married to this woman, so she's a part of him, therefore she becomes a natural part of us. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, that's been accepted. I mean, to my understanding of how America views the institution of marriage, you're not buying a person, you're accepting a package. Now, technically speaking, the president, Joe Biden, we elected him to be the president based on his political acumen, based on his theoretically based on his political acumen, based on his years of service, based on his time as a senator, based on his opinions and platforms. We accept, as Americans, I believe, we accept the wife is part and parcel in with that. She is they have a commonality. They share a common
yes,
view.
Yes, but that is presumed. That is presumed.
Yeah.
We don't know whether in fact that they're a team. We don't know that they're a team. And even if they are a team, the wife hasn't run for office. The wife hasn't been vetted. There has been no scrutiny brought on the wife and her political history and what it is likely to be in the event that she takes over this seat. And don't we have rules? Don't we have rules that say that everybody has to qualify, everybody has to go through a process and be approved by the people?
Yeah. But now you're opening a whole new kettle of fish here. You're getting into the institution of marriage. You're getting into the institution of marriage.
It has nothing to do with marriage.
You're getting into couples. You're getting into what the American ideal of a marriage is and what the presidency is. Like I said, there's never been a single president. If someone was single, they couldn't run for president because I believe there'll be an implication of trust. Is this person responsible enough to run the country?
Understand that? Do the people understand and accept that premise?
I think so. I think they have. I mean, they have since I've been alive in
the
country.
The time has come. I'm saying the time has come. We should stop thinking so. We have to make this very, very clear. What if, for example, on the outside, it looked like Donald Trump and Melania Trump were a team? We don't know.
I mean, to be honest with you, come on. It really didn't look like Donald and Melania were even together on the marital aspect, let alone being a political team.
But she still had access. Donald Trump's children had access that they did not qualify for.
Oh, yeah. That's nepotism. I mean, that goes without saying. There should be no nepotism in the political office, especially the highest in the land. But the husband and wife question, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I agree with you to a certain extent. It's something that should be questioned. But right now, we got a little bit too much to deal with. Right now, I mean,
Lord, I didn't think I would hear you say, right now, let's just do what we got to do to get
Yes, I'm sorry to say, but right now, I can't get into that finitia of detail right now. Let's handle what we got to handle. Then we'll talk about that. I'm sorry. Because we got a lot to handle.
Well, all right. Thank you so much for your opinion and for contributing today. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
I'm sort of agreeing with you, but this happened a long time ago with, I don't know about the Roosevelts because I wasn't alive, but with Reagan, Nancy practically became the president on her own accord, because everybody felt that her husband was, Ronnie was kind of like out of it. He's calling her mommy, 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 you know. And she had to take over for him, and we sort of all accepted it. Remember her just say no, and she was always had something to say, and she looked like she was running the country. And
that's what it looks like. And she was. She was.
She was running a country. Right.
So, and does the country deserve that? Do the people deserve that? It's not that there weren't any provisions made in the event that the president succumbed to a situation where, you know, he's lost his mind or memory or whatever it is, he's debilitated. There are provisions for that, according to the law. She decided, I will decide what the law will be, and the law would permit me, because I'm deciding it, I will take over.
Right. Like, there's laws that if the president is unable to carry out his duties because he's incoherent, then the vice president has to step in, or somebody, not his wife, like Nancy. Everybody seemed to love her so much. Oh, how cute. You know, he calls her mommy, and she comes out and takes over for him to help him out. And we all just went along with it. And this is how.
Well, that's the point we're making. Is that
right.
Something that is acceptable in
a
country?
No, it's not acceptable.
Okay, that's the question.
Not acceptable to me.
Well, then it's not acceptable.
Well, I have another theory on it. I have another point about it. Besides Nancy Reagan, that was just an example that we allowed that to happen. And then since then, we've had this going on. It seems as a normal thing. You know, even with mayors, remember Cuomo with Matilda and this one with this one. So, you know, it's been going on far too long. Like you're saying, it could be dangerous. It's almost like, you know, if a lot of people feel we have only a one-party system here. Democrats, Republicans are the same. And I called it a monarchical dictatorship. And it's almost like, instead of calling them kings, queens, princesses, and dukes and earls, they call them president, vice president, governors, mayors, senators, congresspeople. They think they're royalty, and that's the way they're behaving, you know, like they're the royal family.
Well, we seem to think that they're royalty, too, because we, and you just cited an excellent example of Nancy Reagan. She just stepped in. It was Ronald Reagan who got elected, but it was Nancy who was running the joint. And there's been no question, real question raised about the consequence of that, or whether it was something legal. We just had somebody say, well, I'm married to him. You should trust it. I would look out for the country the same way he did. But that's not necessarily so. Thanks, E, for contributing today. Henry from Chicago. You're on the air. Thank you.
Hey, Trace, how's it going?
Okay.
All right, let's try this.
So what do you think about this question?
All right. So in some sense, I agree, and in some sense, I have to push back on you.
Okay.
And I'm speaking of this as a person who is married for 15 years. So, yes, I do agree that spouses should not be allowed to make executive decisions. They should not be allowed to even be part of any meetings or any type of situation where the elected official has to make a decision. All right. They have advisors and everything like that. However, in a sense, they are privy to the information because they are married to these people. Now, when you're talking about, and I think Ed was talking about, when you're talking about the institution of marriage, there's a lot that is being shared amongst the spouses, amongst the people who live together. And especially when you're in when you've been in a marriage for so many years, I mean, it's just common knowledge. So, you know, my take on it is this. Yes, it is a very thin line when you're talking about spouses. Of politicians, but at the same time, you have to assume that these people who are married to these politicians know. And don't get me wrong, there are places where, you know, the professional field can be separated by the personal field, but we're talking about the president and the vice president of the United States. These are not normal jobs. And I'm and from my understanding of it, these jobs are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So when somebody calls you at 3 a.m. in the morning, it is expected for you to pick up your phone and answer it. So, you know, I just think that, it is assumed that these people have the certain knowledge of what their spouses are. They should not be allowed to make decisions or even be, you know, even be advisors. However, there might be some sort of influence, and we have to take that into account. Now, you and the last caller were talking about, you know, Nancy Reagan. And for me, I think that was the fault of the government because of the fact that nobody, or I don't know, I can't remember it right now, but what happened to invoking the 25th Amendment when a president is incoherent or not able to do their jobs, you know, in a capacity where they're supposed to be president, then that should be invoked. And it wasn't. So that's why Nancy Reagan kind of ran amok of the White House. So, you know, for me,
Nancy.
So I think it just should be assumed. And for me, you know, I've known people who've ran locally here for political offices and they've been married. And trust me, the spouses have been vetted already. When you're talking about big time politics in Chicago, and I can't imagine what it is on a national level. They know who the spouses are, and they vet them. The media, the campaign people, they vet them thoroughly in regard.
Yeah, but they vet them with respect to their interests. The people have no say. And then it is assumed that they're okay with it. Nobody ever asks the people, look, Fred, who was a congressman here for 30 years, Fred is losing his memory, and it would be inevitable that he's got to give up the seat. Well, that's part of the process, too. If Fred is not capable of discharging his duties, then let him vacate the seat. Why is that to be assumed, because they're married, that somebody has automatic advantage over anybody else who could vie for the seat?
Well, you know what, Utrecht, I'm not sure, because yeah, there are probably some municipalities who have some strange type of way of replacing people because they're mentally incapacitated. But when we're talking about the presidency, automatically the vice president is the one who steps up and not the wife or the husband if it's a female.
Right, but look at the situation now. Let's say automatically then that Kamala Harris will have to step up. But Kamala Harris is married to somebody who is functioning, in effect, as a political person, not given permission to do that. You all right with that?
Well, if it doesn't cross the boundaries of what their decision makings are, then yeah, I would be okay with it.
Okay. So you say now, wait till the fecal matter collides with the oscillating device. And then I want to know, what do you think it?
Now, you know, Utrecht, I've been educated in the Chicago public schools, and I had no idea what you just said.
When the crap hits the fan, you know this country. Everybody's looking for the short way out, the short way to success, and we have no idea. We the people have no control over this. We have no idea what is going on, and because I'm seeing the signs that we're supposed to have accepted this already. Okay, so you're married to Kamala Harris. Good for you. I hope you're enjoying your marriage and everything. But why should that mean that I should be okay with you stepping in and making decisions in certain circumstances or making decisions at all without having gone through the vetting process of any candidate. We've got to look at this because it's already been a problem, I'm sure, although people wouldn't raise it nationally and publicly. But we have no control over these people. They're nice and they're smiling and everything. And we are supposed to accept that, well, if you like Kamala Harris, you would like any decision she makes. And she made the decision to marry this guy. Therefore, we should accept that. No. Wrong move. Wrong move.
Well, thanks. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
The only thing I would say is, It on a local level, I would agree with you because I do see it here in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area. But on a national level, where more eyes are on it, I'm a little lenient to it. But you know, that's just my opinion.
I can run off a number of names that were exactly in the same situation that produced havoc in Chicago because. People said, well, he was elected. Okay, so he was convicted of fraud and conspiracy to commit fraud. Okay, that was him. But his wife is different. Do a couple of names come to mind?
Yes.
Okay, so this is what I'm asking. We got to fix this right now before it gets even worse, because right now I think we should be concerned about, you know, what these folks do in their private lives is their business. But I'm telling you, for the entire time that Donald Trump was in office, I'm just going with a recent example, who knows what the heck was going on? On the Melania side of things, we don't know. We still don't know what his children were able to accomplish for themselves in terms of under-the-table contracts and money that they had access to and so forth, how that went, whether with or without Trump's knowledge, we still don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, that's the problem I have, because I think he allowed that, because obviously he abused power. He abused it.
Yes, but some of the nicest people abuse power, too. You talk about the Clintons. We did a whole series of how much money these people worked politically together to just generate tons and tons and tons of money, never came up for discussion in Congress. Never. So let's revisit this a couple of months down the line and see if you change your mind about it. Thanks,
right,
Henry, for your call.
All right,
Thank you. Desiree from Florida, you're on the air.
Hi, peace, Patrice, and hello to all of our other listeners. Just wanted to say, yes, I was listening, and when Eve from Edgewater was speaking, I said, yes, thank you. This is like a monarchy, but, you know, instead of kings and queens, yes, they're just called presidents. And I am no fan at all of Trump and all of the hoo-has that have been going on this year. But I remember when he did get some president, I deep down inside, while everybody was writhing in agony and crying and burning torches and things, I said, wow, maybe this is the best thing that could have ever happened to us. Because now maybe we can all just, maybe our eyes will open and we'll see, we can stop becoming statists. We can stop thinking that the United States government is a shining star and, oh, my God, the presidency, it must be maintained positive and pure and clean. And it's such a beautiful thing, and this person's going to wreck it. All of these things that have been happening, I mean, it should be waking us up And I think the question of, you know, oh, should if this person's married to this person, is the presidency influenced? I mean, the president could be influenced whoever is in his earshot or eyeshot of that person because they're privy to being in such a close proximity. But are those people, are their agendas in alliance with what we need and, you know, the things that the people need? I mean, that's just what I, that's just my sense.
Well, I think you're onto something there. But I think the most important part of what you said today is the need for vigilance on this question. Because crazy things can happen and have happened and will continue to happen under the guise, well, they're married. So my thing is, so what? Let's hope they're happy and in their married life. But it has nothing to do with the reality that a lot could go wrong politically, and a lot has gone wrong politically that we have allowed to happen. And we need to pay attention to what is happening now. We can't just say, okay, Joe Biden is president, therefore Jill Biden, his chosen wife, is equally acceptable to us. No, that's not how it works. There's a process. There are procedures to safeguard against crazy things happening. But these things just never come up.
And so
and it's time
how
that
do these,
you do it.
Yes. Yes, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, and it's just, it seems like it's like another onion layer. On top of all the things that we have to be vigilant over. For example, Tom Vilsack being announced as Joe Biden's pick, and he's just a big Monsanto pusher, and he was there in the Obama administration, and he got a lot of genetically modified food on the cusp of things reined in Obama administration. Now he's back again for, you know, Biden, you know. That particular thing, that's Biden's move. Whatever Kamala is going to come up with and then her chosen partner or Biden's chosen partner, it just seems like more and more cooks are in the kitchen, but are the customers complaining enough? When are the customers going to walk out of that restaurant and say, oh, man, you know what? I was here, you know, 15 years ago, and shoot, I really thought this salmon tasted way better then. It turns out it probably was the same stinking fish this whole entire time. I'm going to go somewhere else. And then what are those options are just two questions I just came up with right now, not to throw them out there, but I guess.
I mean, your examples are really appropriate because it underscores the need for vigilance on this question. Mm-hmm. And it has to be resolved. And in a way that lets the public know that this is not being ignored. This is a bona fide concern, and that they are dealing with it before any problems arise. But we both know problems have arisen. It's just that we don't know, and we don't know how they were resolved, if they were resolved at all. But you go down your list of people, even at the local level, and you can see the need for creating some distance here and accountability. Thanks so much for calling in today. I really appreciate it. And that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you for your input. Think about this, because I predict this will be an issue. We'll see each other tomorrow and talk some more. Bye-bye.